The meeting will come to order. We do not yet have a quorum, so we will not approve the minutes, but we'll start out with Linda Distad from MACD. And in case members didn't know, which probably members don't know, Ms. Distad and I used to teach elementary school together. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the tape and share with us how we could, as legislators, work with your organization.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, my name is Linda Distad. I'm the Associate Dean for Education Programs at the College of St. Catherine and St. Paul, but today I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, MACD. And I just wanted you to be aware that this is our first official MACD Day at the Capitol, and so you may have seen a number of us walking the halls and stopping at, in your offices, and certainly visiting the various committee meetings. So thank you for all the work that you do. MACD this year has four legislative priorities. They are high consistent standards for all teachers, funding for new teacher induction programs, school readiness and early learning, and closing the achievement gap. And closing the achievement gap really consumes the other three priorities. MACD wants to offer their assistance in any way that they can help, and please do call on us. And again, thank you for all of your work.
Thank you very much, Ms. Distad.
I have a set of our priorities if you want.
Okay. One of the pages right behind you can pass them out. Thank you very much. We now have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order. And first we have the minutes of February 28th. Representative Demmer, have you looked at those minutes?
I think the minutes look just fine, Madam Chair. I'd move their adoption.
Representative Demmer moves approval of the minutes of February 28th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And then we have the minutes for March 1st. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes for that day.
Anybody have any discussion on the minutes that have been moved for March 1st? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And the minutes are approved for March 1st. Representative Erickson, is she here? Not here. Okay. Is Representative Dabney here? Representative Dabney, you're up because Representative Erickson is not here. Are you ready?
Get my files in, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I do better with paperwork than
that
I do without.
Most of us do. And Representative Garofalo, I'm assuming you want a little more people here. Representative Dabney, welcome to the table. We don't need to welcome you to the committee. And please restate your name, of course, and move your bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jim Dabney, I'd like to move House File 1185 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the capable of omnibus.
Representative Dabney moves House File 1185, which is now before us.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about your bill.
Certainly. Madam Chair and members, House File 1185 updates the lease levy ability for both school districts and school districts who are members of intermediate school districts. In the case of school districts, it increases the levy potential from $100 to $150 for pupil, and for intermediate school districts from 25 for school districts who are members of intermediate school districts from $25 to $50 per pupil. I have two testifiers here today who can speak to the issue.
Welcome, Mr. Kroonquist. Please restate your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and appreciate the opportunity to testify, and want to thank Representative Dabney for bringing this bill forward. Madam Chair, we really think this bill goes hand in hand with another one of the initiatives that you've already talked about, and that's full-day kindergarten. The reality is that a number of districts will not be able to move forward with full-day kindergarten because they don't have the facility space available. And this would provide an excellent short-term option for them to transition while they're waiting for new construction or for building space, to be able to allow them to immediately jump in and offer full-day kindergarten. A number of our districts are already at the cap, the $100 per pupil cap, and so they have no room to expand under the current law, and this would allow them to do so. And with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to Superintendent Christensen to talk a little bit more about the impact.
Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent Christensen. If you could restate your name for the tape and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Christensen. I'm Superintendent of Intermediate District 917. We have 8 member districts in Dakota County. And I'm here to speak in relationship to our needs at the Intermediate District. As you know, we provide special education programming for low-incident special education needs from our member districts, as well as provide career and technical programming for secondary students of our member districts. We are a fairly aggressive user of the lease levy because many times we have programs that need to start and exist for a period of time to meet a particular need, and so we're able to go find a place where we can modify and adapt it to our needs, but if we also have that program need to change or move or be provided in a different place, we're able to adjust to that using this particular vehicle. As you all know, our costs continue to go up with in relationship to the cost for space and the maintenance and other things that go into the owners that we work with. And this levy hasn't changed for a number of years, and as Scott Christmas pointed out, 8 of the 34 districts that are members of intermediates have now reached the limit on their $25 authority, and we're asking that you consider raising that authority so we can continue to provide those needs and meet those adapting needs of school districts. One final note to close on is that many of our spaces, or several of our spaces, actually were found and have been used since our inception in about 1970, and some of them really have outlived their usefulness. And so as we move on and look at other options for spaces, we are finding that those costs are certainly a challenge for us to meet with our member districts. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Christensen. Are there any questions from members? Any testimony for or against in the audience? Representative Dabney, closing comments.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much for one of the faster hearings on the committee. I just would remind members of the 2 criteria on this. One, the leasing of the building or land needs to be economically advantageous to the school district, and they must apply for permission to the commissioner before levying this levy. So there are those conditions on this, but this is an opportunity to update that to meet the current fiscal needs of districts and intermediate districts. And thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, and we've got the fiscal note here, and we're awaiting our committee targets.
All right.
Thank you very much, Representative Erickson. I think we will go back and do your bill, House File 838. Another member we do not need to welcome to the committee, but we're happy to hear your bill, and I...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move House File 838 to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Erickson moves House File 838 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And please tell us about your bill and introduce your testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for hearing this bill. I think it's one of the several that we're hearing this session for special levies. And I have with me today the superintendent of Onania Public Schools, John Varner, who in just a minute will explain the need for this. What happens in some of our communities is that we have co-location of facilities such as the Ralph Olson Center in Onania that facilitates alternative learning, preschool, daycare, and other programs that are part of the school system, and then there are also community organizations that take advantage of using this facility. And so to help Onania, Superintendent Varner is here to explain how the school district being allowed to levy would assist in covering the costs. So with that, Madam Chair and committee, I will introduce John Varner.
Thank you, Representative Erickson, and welcome, Superintendent Varner. If you could restate your name for the tape.
John Varner, Superintendent of Schools, Onania. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to speak on this bill this afternoon. Originally, Onania and the city, Onania Public Schools and the city of Onania, worked together to provide a community learning center and recreation center in the heart of greater downtown Onania. We have about 900 residents living in the town, and the school district serves about 5,000. We were really proud of our collaboration and cooperation between two government entities working together to get this in operation. As Representative Erickson said, the Rolf Olson Center provides a community learning center and a community gathering center for Onania. We have to remember in small towns it's very difficult to find space to get 200 people together, and we're meeting that need. Also, the city of Onania, with help from the Onania Alliance Club, was able to put up a rather nice and functional health and fitness facility, which is being used also for rehabilitation and physical therapy through the hospital. So we're quite proud of our facility in downtown Onania. Originally, we had applied for a cooperative local facilities grant. It was Admin Minnesota's proposal for the 2005 bonding bill. We made the cut into the bonding bill, but then the bonding bill didn't make the cut, so we were kind of out of it that way.
These things happen around here. We always try again.
We're finding that out. We're finding that out. Approving a levy for Onania Public Schools to help with the operations of this very valuable center to our community would be very important to keeping that open. We're faced with about $500,000 in cuts this year to the school district, and the school board has tasked me with finding every last dime and penny that we can squeeze. We are losing, unfortunately, staff, and we are losing programs. We felt that the levy authority to help run the Rolf Olson Center and the Lyons Community Center would really help us out. This bill requests a levy of authority of about $35 per AMCPUs. At this rate, the district would raise about almost $29,000 a year at a cost to the average taxpayer's property of 50 cents per household. We don't feel that that is burdensome to the taxpayers. In fact, our property taxes have gone down the last 2 years. I can't pass a levy referendum to save my life in that community right now, but this would really be beneficial. I'm quite pleased that the Rolf Olson Center and the Lions Club Center is in use 7 days a week. We envisioned that, but it's still nice to see it happening where the parking lot's full. So I again ask you please to move this forward and give us the opportunity at a minimal cost to our taxpayers to keep the Rolf Olson and the LCC centers open. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Superintendent Werner, we can ask the staff too, but do you know if any other district has a levy for this reason?
Currently in place, no. I know there is at least one other district in the state that's asking for the same levy authority.
Okay, thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, as you know, there is a fiscal note available for this.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Yes, members, there is a fiscal note with the property tax implications on the back, on the levy implications on the back. If anybody has questions about that. I don't see any members on the list. Are there any people in the audience that would wish to testify for or against the bill? Representative Erickson, like Representative Dabney, it seems to be a good day for hearing a bill. Thank you very much. And Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 838 be recommended to pass for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I think we have a critical mass of people here, so I just wanted to call your attention, members, to an email that was sent out by Liz Mandelman about next week's meeting. But just in case you haven't seen it yet, it might appear on your calendar through your legislative assistant. But on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night, we have scheduled this room for 6 p.m., and unfortunately, with our committee deadlines, we're going to have to do double time, meeting at the daytime and the evening in order to hear all the bills. I feel very strongly that we should hear members' bills. Members come here to put ideas forward, and so we're going to be very nice to all the other legislators and hear bills. And then also on Friday, at 2:15 p.m. also in this room. We will continue on hearing the bills so we can finish by our deadlines that we have before us. So, all right. And then Representative Garofalo, Representative Hillstrom, you could be going to the table with your witnesses. Representative Garofalo asked if he could be allowed a couple pot shots at me about my legislation from yesterday, and I said, of course, anytime. Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think I framed it in exactly those terms.
No, you did. You were much nicer, Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And for members who don't know, yesterday Representative Greiling introduced some legislation that is mildly controversial, to say the least. And I want to be on the record, first of all, in case any of my friends back in the district are listening, that obviously I've been very clear that I'm opposed to that idea. I do not like it. I don't think it's necessary. And we'll do everything I can to defeat it. But, Madam Chair, I do want to say something for the record also, that I do want to thank you in one respect, because I want to thank you for being honest about it. For the last couple of months, in fact, the last year, we've heard a lot of noise from people about how we can do all these great things and expand all these programs, and no one's got to pay for it. And while we definitely have different perspectives on issues, the one thing I think you and I would probably both agree on is that the issue of honesty is a commodity that is in short supply in this chamber. And I did want to thank you for at least bringing the idea forward and for being honest. I want to thank you for being wrong, but also I do want to thank you for being honest, because this noise about how we can do all these things and it doesn't cost money and no one has to pay for it, it's just false. So just wanted to make my little speech on it and hopefully incite someone from the other side of the aisle to attack me.
Thank you very much, Representative Garofalo. And I knew you would present your opposition to my bill in that tenor, so that's why I called on you. I respect you very much. You are wrong, however, but I also know that you are, in your opinions, you are honest as well. And I know that you were brave enough last year to vote for a gas tax increase. And so I know... So I hope that I wish we were on TV today. Oh, darn. But I just know that each of us here, within our own philosophies and within our own districts, does what we think is right. And that's what I always have valued about this education committee, is that we, with our best of hearts, discuss things, you know, very fervently for students. And we have our different philosophies on how to pay for it, what we should be prioritizing with how to pay for it. But I think we always have a good civil discussion, and I appreciate that so much about this committee. And I think we have a wonderful committee, and I'm glad, Representative Garofalo, that you're on it. And I really respect your comments. But now, Representative Marquardt has probably got another pot shot for you. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, we always have to pay for things, and whether or not it's through taxes or through fees, or if we push it down to the locals to pay for things. So I do appreciate the honesty, and I think when we talk about that, we have to take everything into consideration, because it may not be the state necessarily raising the revenues or paying for it, but somewhere along the line it ends up that way. And in looking at the property tax issue, many of the concerns we have there is because of trying to save what we consider costs on the statewide side of things, but we push them onto the backs of property owners. So we'll have many, many days and hours to debate all of this, but there's a lot of ways to look at the honesty and who pays for what. But ultimately, it has to get paid for.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Very wise words as well. Representative Hillstrom is already on the committee, so you can move your own bill, and I see you're ready for the show.
I am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House 892 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 bill.
Representative Hillstrom moves House File 892 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill appropriates $1.75 million in fiscal year 2008 and the same amount in 2009 to the Minnesota Humanities Commission to provide content-based development for teachers. And with me are people through the Humanities Commission, and I'd like to turn it right over to them.
Okay. Who's going first? Mr. Romanstein?
Madam Chair, members, good afternoon. My name is Stanley Romanstein, and I'm president of the Minnesota Humanities Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak for just a moment in support of House File 892. The Minnesota Humanities Commission has a singular focus, strengthening E-12 education throughout Minnesota. We work with educators and schools to create strong programs in the humanities, programs in American and world history, geography, languages and literature, ethics, civics, and social studies, strong humanities programs to accomplish two things. First, we are doing our part to close the achievement gap between Minnesota students of color and their classmates. It's easy to understand that the humanities make a difference in building essential vocabulary, in promoting critical and creative thinking, in developing fundamental problem-solving skills. But it's not just our opinion that the humanities do those things. A four-year longitudinal study of our work conducted by the Wilder Research Center concluded that strong humanities programs do begin to close the achievement gap between students of color and their classmates, and that they promote measurable and sustainable gains in both reading and in math. The Wilder Report indicates that students in each of the nine schools involved in our study showed, quote, statistically significant gains in reading and math every year. We're very proud of our work that we do with Minnesota's educators and with schools, and we're grateful that both national and local research supports our contention that a strong grounding in the humanities makes a positive, measurable, sustainable difference in student performance. We are doing our part to close Minnesota's achievement gap, and we do have a handout about this.
The pages can pass it out, and I apologize for saying Romanstein. I should,
right,
of all people, get an EI proper,
right,
properly pronounced. Okay.
Second of our two things, we make it possible for Minnesota students to succeed by creating opportunities for their teachers to gain the new knowledge they need to teach in today's classrooms. As the saying goes, you cannot teach what you don't know. Our state education standards require students and their teachers to acquire in-depth knowledge about an incredible array of subjects: Native American history and culture, the industrialization of China, and the principles of American democracy, to name just three. And it's not just high school teachers that we require to be content specialists. We require similar feats of K-5 teachers. Knowing a little bit about a lot is not sufficient in the 21st century. We expect educators to know and to teach our children a lot about a lot of things. Teachers expect the Minnesota Humanities Commission to be there to help them master the new knowledge they need. Traditionally, we provided access to that knowledge by creating 18 to 20 residential seminars each year. The younger generation of teachers tells us that while they value those residential seminars, they might be able to attend one or two seminars in a year, but that they need and want the knowledge available in all of our seminars. They're asking us to podcast the information, to make it available online, on demand, 24/7, live stream from our website, to repackage and distribute knowledge to them through a variety of media. House File 892 asks you to provide funding for those initiatives. In the past year, we worked with more than 700 educators, teachers who worked with about 56,000 K-12 students across our state. They participated in professional development seminars created by the commission, and many of them returned for additional knowledge through additional seminars. They report tremendous gains in their own content knowledge, in the way they teach, and in the way their students perform. Our job at the Minnesota Humanities Commission is to listen to what Minnesota's educators need, to understand what they need and what they want, and to find the best minds in Minnesota, scholars at our colleges and universities, experts in the field, to bring them together with teachers, to share their knowledge with educators throughout the state through every possible and every effective means, and of course to find the funding to make those efforts possible. Our work does make it possible for Minnesota's kids to succeed by creating opportunities for their teachers to gain the new knowledge that they need. I'm joined this afternoon by two colleagues, Sabrina Williams, Executive Director of the Excel Academy for Higher Learning, located in Brooklyn Park, and Tracy Christensen, a fifth grade teacher at Dowling Urban Environmental Elementary School in Minneapolis. Ms. Williams and Ms. Christensen will talk about their experiences with the Minnesota Humanities Commission, about the difference our work has made to them, to their schools, and to their students. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Stanley. Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, all members for allowing me to come in today and to speak on behalf of the Humanities Commission. I am Sabrina Williams, the Executive Director and Founder of Excel Academy Charter School in Brooklyn Park. Excel Academy was founded 7 years ago. We started our first year in 2001. We are currently in our sixth year of operation. We started with kindergarten through fourth grade, 65 students. And we have, our enrollment now currently is pre-K through sixth grade with over 345 students. I must say that without the Humanities Commission involvement in our school in our first years, our school may not have been as successful as it is today. We were lucky enough, which I don't know of any school actually in the Twin Cities, that started their first year of operation with the Humanities Commission involved. And we were able to do that, and the Humanities Commission has been there to support us ever since. Excel Academy, our enrollment includes 88% of our students that we serve who are free and reduced lunch eligible. 50% of our students are Native African families, 45% African American students, 5% Hispanic, Caucasian, Asian students. We serve families from many of the North Metro areas, including Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Crystal, Maple Grove, New Hope, Plymouth, as far as Rogers, St. Michael, Albertville, Champlin, Blaine, and Forest Lake. So we serve a wide range of students. And since we have began, again, the Humanities Commission has been there for us. Recently, Excel Academy was chosen for the Minnesota Department of Education's Facility Improvement Grant. And Excel was chosen for this grant out of 39 other schools that competed for this grant. Excel had the top score. This grant enables us to improve our school facilities that will help improve student achievement by having more community partners, such as the Humanities Commission, giving us a safe, welcoming environment, and updating our school and learning environment properly with the needed facilities and equipment that we need in order to make our school safe, strong, and a great creative learning environment. We have worked, again, with the Humanities Commission since before our beginning, which we started in 2001, but the Humanities Commission was there before that to help strengthen our humanities program, not only our humanities program, but also our reading and our writing program. The Commission prepared Excel staff for curriculum implementation, ensured curricular alignment with the state standards, and integrated African-American history into the school's curriculum. And I will say, it was so imperative to have the Humanities Commission there. We started Excel with all new teachers, first-year teachers, and the Humanities Commission was there to equip them and prepare them with the knowledge that they needed to implement inside the classrooms and facilitate learning on global awareness to our students. The Commission also regularly hosts important roundtable conversations for specialists, including art and music, also our grade level teachers and school administrators. Through its Teacher Institute seminars, the Commission has made it possible for our students to deepen their knowledge in a wide variety of subjects. And these subjects include all subjects, integrating African American heritage and culture with core knowledge, ancient China and Japan at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, electricity in the elementary grades at the Bakken Library and Museum, teaching about American Indians in the elementary grades, social studies standards implementation and alignment workshops, teaching world religions in the public school setting, grade level humanities roundtables to core knowledge teachers, administrative leadership roundtables, and also site visits. The Humanities Commission has been there as mentors for our teachers and also our administration. And as a result of the Humanities Commission's involvement, Excel has seen standardized test scores increase greatly, an increase in students' knowledge, competence, and awareness of global studies and world issues. We have parents who are learning from their children about the continents and the oceans of the world. Our parents are so impressed when their kindergartners come home and begin to tell them about the oceans and tell them about the countries and the cultures that they're learning about that many of our parents have not learned about themselves. students who are culturally literate and who are excited to see their native culture and country being a valuable part of the curriculum. As I said, many of our students are from West African countries, and they're so excited to learn about different countries and also, in particular, their country. And the Humanities Commission has also helped us in integrating the curriculum so that these students can be more comfortable and in the American society, learning about America, learning about, our culture and history also, as well as other cultures around the world. Excel Academy has been blessed to have the Humanities Commission as a part of our 6 years of operation. In addition to that, I've been in education for over 20 years. I taught in the St. Paul Public Schools before starting Excel Academy. And during that time, it was so nice to have the opportunity. Actually, I worked right down the street from here at Capitol Hill Magnet School. Some of you may have heard of that. And the teachers took the advantage of the opportunities that were available at the Humanities Commission, learning the content. There are so many teachers who don't have that opportunity, being in the classroom, being swarmed with so many other things. To have the Humanities Commission is a great blessing and a great value to Minnesota Public Schools.
Thank you for your time. Very much. Ms. Christensen, please state your name for the tape and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Representatives. Wow, I couldn't say it any better than Ms. Williams did. And I knew I recognized you. My kids went to Capitol Hill, so we may have a connection there. I'm a Minneapolis Public School teacher. I've worked for Minneapolis Public Schools for over 20 years. I currently work at Dowling Elementary in South Minneapolis, where our student population is nearly 500 kids. 42% of those fall within the federal guidelines of being in poverty. Half of our students are of color, and of those, 30% come from immigrant families and require extra assistance in learning English. My own classroom consists of 28 kids, and their skills vary from no English skills to reading at an 11th grade level at a pace equal to my own. And we also have a number of special needs students in our school. One of my students, for example, has cerebral palsy and has a full-time one-on-one aide who assists him in both his educational and his other physical undertakings during the course of the day. My students have many of the challenges, educational challenges, that face children who come from families of poverty, from immigrant families who lack the English skills necessary to participate in American culture. And in addition to that, one of the modern challenges that maybe your own children face is that so many of our homes that our kids come from have a dearth of printed material. And by that I mean most of their entertainment and information is gotten through the internet or through television. And what I see that has resulted in is that reading and writing are pushed to the schools, and kids don't do as much reading and writing at home. And so as a teacher, what that means to me is I need to expand my abilities to communicate with my students beyond the written page. That's what the teacher institutes that I've attended at the Humanities Commission have helped me do. Because I've been a teacher for so long, I've attended many different staff developments and workshops and so forth. And really, the Humanities Commission teacher institutes that I've attended have been far superior to others that my district has provided, good as they are. Others that I've attended outside the district at even a national level really don't match the quality that I get when I go to the Humanities Commission for my teacher training. Simply put, the Humanities Commission has found the magic in creatively combining the rich historical content with relevant and easily accessed material that I can use in my classroom with community experts and community partners such as Sabrina listed, the museums, and other organizations whose main intent is to pass on what they know to teachers so that we can pass it on to our students. One of the things that I'm able to do in my classroom, it kind of gets back to a radio station I like to listen to, KFAI, which has its motto, "One Many Worlds, One Frequency." I feel like my classroom is many worlds, one classroom. And I feel like the Humanities Commission is a conduit for information about the world that's either historical or current they, in their teacher roundtables or in their teacher institutes, give the information to people like me, and then I can turn around, we can turn around, and give it to our students. I see my position as a teacher primarily as one of being an agent for social change and propagating social change through the educational growth of my students. And I think it's especially important that my students receive their humanities education so that they, in turn, can become responsible citizens in our democratic society. So I hope that you, like I do, value the service that the Humanities Commission is providing to educators like me and validate it by funding the proposal put forth by Representative Holmstrom. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. It sounds like two wonderful teachers made more wonderful by the Minnesota Humanities Commission. I don't see any members on the list. I have, Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is for Mr. Romanstein.
Yes.
I'm wondering how many districts and schools are able to use your services and if there is a cost for that.
Mr. Romanstein.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, I can get you the right number, I think, from my staff behind me. We do work with teachers throughout the state. We publicize, advertise our seminars directly to teachers, so there is no limitation. Part of the thing that we're asking for is funding to be able to distribute what we do electronically so that there is no limitation to teachers accessing our services, but we are available to teachers all over the state. We do take our seminars outside of the Twin Cities, to Duluth, to Bemidji, to Thief River Falls, and around the state. I'm sorry, I've forgotten the second part of your question,
Representative McFarland.
I wondered if there was any cost to the districts or the teachers to attend, like, your seminars or anything.
Mr. Romanstein.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, yes, there is a cost. Teachers pay about 20% of the total cost of the seminar. For a two-day residential seminar, it's about $125, which includes lodging, meals, materials, and everything that one would need in a two-day seminar. There's other pricing for one-day seminars or evening seminars or something, but there is a cost share.
Mr. Romanstein, I mean, your staff is behind you if you want to get that answer, or do you want that person to come up?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I had one other question, too.
Representative McFarland, we'll get back to that, but this is your first question. Please state your name to the record and give us the answer. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matthew Brandt, Madam Chair, Representative. We serve about 800 teachers a year, and as Stanley said, they are open to all teachers across the state. If I had to estimate, I'd estimate we probably, it's about 300 or 400 districts a year that we serve, roughly, in the aggregate. And if you'd like more specifics, we can get you that, but it's about 800 teachers a year, and they all represent about 300 to 400 districts. It varies year to year.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Representative McFarland, your last question.
Yes, I just wanted to know, is money to pay for that taken out of the district staff development funds?
Mr. Romanstein.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, it varies from district to district. Some teachers have access to professional development funds through their district, and the district pays for generally one seminar, but not more than that. A lot of teachers tell us that they cover the expenses out of their own pockets and that they are generally there on their own time as well.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Mrs. Christians?
Christensen.
Christensen. Just a matter of a comment, Madam Chair. I heard you say KFAI. As a person from KFAI that has a show.
No.
I guess I...
You're famous.
I just wanted to say our singing is regular without boundaries, but in this case, it's school without boundaries. Is that what you're trying to say?
I think what I recited is an obsolete moniker, maybe.
We do. Representative Dominguez was famous, but now we really are. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And by the way, members, if you want to get your dancing shoes on, tune in to Representative Dominguez's program on weekends. It's terrific. Just very quickly, very quick comments. One from Mr. Romanstein. Is that your name too? Romanstein. I'm sorry. I've watched the commission over the years, Humanities Commission. I have to say, members, that truly a group that has constantly worked over and over again to make itself increasingly relevant to Minnesota schools and other social institutions. And so I applaud your work in recent years. I've had the good privilege of attending a number of your events over the last couple of years. And then very quickly to our two testifiers, just a full disclosure, my daughter graduated from Capitol Hill a few years ago and went on to Central and is about getting ready to graduate from Oxford College. So I can certainly testify to the quality of instruction in Capitol Hill. So I'm just full disclosure for members that we have a threesome here at Capitol Hill.
Thank you, Rep. Mariani. Rep. Pfeffer.
Madam Chair, and this could be for any of the people that are testifying, excuse me. Would it be fair to say that the majority of the services usually end up with the metro schools over the years?
Mr. Romanstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, I don't think that would be fair. No. And I can say wholeheartedly, in the 6 years that I have been at the Humanities Commission, there's been a concerted effort on the part of the staff and direction by the Board of Directors to take the services from the Twin Cities out into Greater Minnesota and to make sure that we are physically present in Greater Minnesota and that it's not just a Twin Cities organization. We do have a building here, a humanities center that tends to draw people. It was created by state statute and through state support in 1994, and it does serve as a locus, but we do move throughout the state.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, very good. I have one question, Representative Hillstrom. The account for this, as you know, was started out in the Minnesota Heritage Finance Committee. Are you planning to get some funds from there and some funds from K-12, or are you making an effort to get that account switched over, or what's the status on that?
Madam Chair, it states in our DFL brief that Republicans don't have that while this commission is an account listed with the Minnesota Heritage Finance Committee, it does not receive any base appropriations for the federal fiscal year ending October 31st, 2005. The commission had a total revenue of $2.5 million, but none of it came through there.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Romanstein, are you planning to seek any funding there? Is this your total request this year?
Madam Chair, for our work with teachers and the work that we do with education, the request is solely in the K-12 arena.
Mr. Romanstein, do you have other funding, though, for other purposes for the commission in that, since your account, I'm just wondering what's the status of that other account. Obviously, we don't know how much money they're getting, how much money we're getting, but I'm wondering, is there any other sustaining request short of the teacher work that you're putting in at the Minnesota Heritage Finance Committee?
Madam Chair, I know there's been some conversation with them, but I don't know the status. I'd be glad to get back to you on that. But.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much. Representative Hillstrom renews her motion for House File 892 to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Swales.
Yeah, thank you.
Another member of our committee who can move her own bill when she gets settled. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, House File 1151.
Representative Swales moves House File 1151 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair, this particular bill is related to the Minnesota Learning Resource Center, and the bill will appropriate $250,000 per year to continue the work of the Minnesota Learning Resource Center. And this amount is what the level of funding was from 1999 to 2005. In 2006 and 2007, the funding was reduced to $160,000 per year, and we are asking to return to the previous funding level. So at this point, I'm going to introduce the director of Minnesota Learning Resource Center, and that is Director Nancy Farnham.
Okay, and before you start, Ms. Farnham, I noticed you've got four testifiers, so I'm just going to let you all help me look at the clock.
Uh-huh.
We need to get to public testimony, questions and answers, and finish this hearing at 3:15. So if you could all judge your time accordingly. Thank you very much.
3:15, not 3:40. 3:15. Okay.
3:15. Right. The committee ends at 3:45, and we have two more bills. Okay. What did I say? Something else? Oh, okay. All right. Ms. Farnham.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Farnham. Can you hear me okay? And I thank you for inviting us here this afternoon to talk about the MLRC, which is a teacher training institute that is focused on getting kids' brains ready to learn. As many of you know, the MLRC was established through legislative funding back in 1999, and since that time we have worked with 86 schools around the state of Minnesota. As you can see from your blue MLRC packet fact sheet, we have worked with over 14,000 students in those 86 schools, and we've trained nearly 900 teachers statewide at a cost-effective rate of approximately $109 per student. The MLRC replicates three brain stimulation programs, all of which are designed to close readiness gaps and allow all children to achieve their full potential. The programs were developed by the nonprofit agency A Chance to Grow and tested by New Visions, an inner-city charter school that serves 200-plus students annually. I'll just quickly run through what those three interventions are. First of all, the SMART program, which is like the one I call the centerpiece intervention. That involves a series of exercises, often done in an obstacle course setting. These activities are fun for kids, but designed to stimulate the brain stem, where all automatic function takes place. So when a child goes across an overhead ladder, her eyes are tracking back and forth just as they do when she reads. Second intervention is neurotechnology, and that involves two forms of technology designed to address attention and behavior issues, oftentimes used with children who have labels such as ADD and ADHD to help them better attend in the classroom. And our third intervention is an auditory stimulation program, again designed to help a child's brain to process the sound that he or she already hears. All of these are important readiness skills for reading and academic success. Our training model employed by the MLRC is a three-year model. So teams of teachers come to the Minneapolis Training Center for a four-day workshop, part of which is spent talking about typical brain development and what might happen to interrupt that development. Certainly, poverty plays a huge role in brain development, but I also say we have middle-class issues, such as carriers, walkers, jumpers, car seats. They say that the average four-year-old has spent 1,000 hours in a car seat. It's important for safety purposes, but we must also be mindful that there needs to be time spent on the floor for a child's brain to fully develop. SMART addresses these gaps. Following the training, the MLRC mentors follow up with regular on-site mentor visits for 2 years, and then during the third year, our focus is on how to maintain the program and assure its continuation in the school once the mentoring has ended. I won't take time to go through all of our data, but again, if you would refer to some of the materials that we handed out, you'll see we have a graph and information showing gains made by children in kindergarten, first, and second grade. By second grade, children at almost a full year ahead of reading versus where they would be expected to be at that point. I've invited three professionals today who are leading the implementation in their schools to talk with you a little bit about what they are seeing. Stacy DeCourcy, who is the principal at Jordan Elementary, and also Deb Lewis of Cherry Elementary School in Iron, and Director Luana Greensky, both of whom are with the St. Louis County Schools Department of Indian Education. I'd like for them to share with you their experiences with the program.
Ms. DeCourcy is first.
Yeah.
Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Stacy DeCourcy, and I'm the principal at Jordan Elementary in Jordan, Minnesota. 3 years ago, my teacher started working with the Minnesota Learning Resource Center, and they wanted to learn SMART techniques. SMART's a program developed by MLRC that helps develop fine and gross motor skills and improve visual tracking and stimulate auditory processing. We're finding that kids are coming to us, they haven't climbed trees or built forts like they used to, so we're finding that they aren't coming with those gross and fine motor skills, so we need to develop those in order for them to be able to read. During the first year, 10 of my teachers dedicated 30 minutes a day to the SMART techniques. After the first year of implementation, we saw dramatic results, and I'm going to share those. We used the SAS and oral reading tests. We found, this is our third grade group, we found third grade students started the year with 52% reading proficiently. After 4 months using the SMART techniques, our data showed gains with all students, and we had 90% of those students reading proficiently at a third grade level. In kindergarten, we used the Brigance word recognition list to assess students. In the fall, our data showed only 33% proficiency with the Brigance. In the spring, we saw improvement with all of our students, and the gains at the end, 86% of our students were proficient. So, needless to say, at the end of that year, the other teachers in my building said, "What's going on? We want to know. We want to know the magic." So, I now have 24 teachers in my building that are using SMART techniques. We've also become kind of a site to visit. I can tell you in the last 6 months, Prayer Lake, Shakopee, Le Sueur, Belle Plaine, New Prague, Montgomery, Zamboda have all come to visit my classrooms to see what's going on. More than test scores, I want to share the excitement, energy, and renewed dedication to education that my teaching staff now has, thanks in large part to the work that comes out of MLRC. Their monthly mentoring and support has been invaluable to my staff. I'm going to share just a couple of quotes for you. I know our time is short. Gwen Schultz is a third grade teacher in Jordan. She says, "I found that the SMART room activities have increased the academic ability of my students. I have also noticed a definite difference in concentration and attention to detail when we attend the SMART room on a regular basis. Students are able to stay on task for longer periods of time. My students love it." Shannon Office is a kindergarten teacher. She says, "I see the visual tracking and visual stimulation activities are so helpful in preparing students for being able to read. I've learned so many neat activities from our monthly mentor meetings." Our kindergarten team in general will tell you now that we've started using MLRC's techniques that our kids are reading now in November, December, as opposed to February, March. So we're seeing kids reading quite a bit earlier in kindergarten. The last quote I'm going to share is Cindy Lind. She's taught for 30 years. She said, "After 30 years of teaching, I was skeptical of anything new, including the SMART training. After a year of using the techniques, I can now say that spelling, math, and handwriting skills have never been better in first grade. The SMART room is fun and motivating for kids. They don't even know they're learning." The state of Minnesota has raised the bar. In response to this, schools have been asked to look at education, the process of education, in new and creative ways. I believe that our partnership with MLRC has had a tremendous impact on how we implement and deliver curriculum at Jordan Elementary. The MLRC team has been insightful, supportive, and accessible to my staff. We look forward to working with them in the future.
Thank you very much. And so before we see if we can make sure we get through the other testifiers, is there any testimony for or against this bill? Okay, that will help. And so far, no members are on the list. Okay, then each person, though, has like 1 to 2 minutes. So is it Ms. Lewis?
Madam Chair, I'm Deb Lewis, and I am an Indian education coordinator for the Cherry School. Cherry School is a pre-kindergarten through 12th grade rural school in Iron, Minnesota. We're located approximately halfway between Hibbing and Virginia on the Iron Range. 365 students attend the Cherry School, with 181 in the elementary, and 111 elementary students have participated in BOOSTUP either in their regular school day or in a supplemental program. St. Louis County Schools Department of Indian Education is a supplemental program that's funded through the Title VII of the No Child Left Behind Act and the state of Minnesota's Department of Indian Education's Success for the Future grant. SMART BOOSTUP has been a great addition to the Cherry School curriculum. It provides for an alternative learning environment in a positive play-like atmosphere that supports developmentally appropriate instruction. Parents and teachers alike appreciate the program's influence on behavior and school readiness. Our programs include after school, summer, kindergarten through third grade, and four-year-old components. All of our instructors implementing the BOOSTUP curriculum have been trained by the MLRC, and as a mentor school, we receive continued support with site visits, and that's been very important in helping to maintain the program. 45 students have benefited from supplemental BOOSTUP programs sponsored by Indian Education Programs, along with students who participate at the K-3 level during the school day.
Thank you very much. That was very good. Ms. Greensky.
Green Sky.
Hi.
Madam Chair.
You did that better. Much more beautiful.
That's kind of a Polish thing.
I tried to do that to you, didn't I?
Okay. My name is Alana Green Sky. I'm the Director of Indian Education for St. Louis County Schools in northern Minnesota. And we've been offering the Boost Up or Smart program in the Cherry School for this is our second year, and I've got some data here, but being we're short on time, we'll skip on it. What I was looking for when we first started looking at the Boost Up program is some innovative way that we could help our students in school. And the teachers and everyone works real hard, but when we did some training for parents on how you could help your kids, when their literacy levels were low, when their vocabulary levels were low, we were seeing some parents not really wanting to put themselves into that position of saying, gee, I can't read, I can't help you. So Boost Up was a real good fit for us because it gave our parents a way to work with their students without having that negativity or saying my teacher is better than you are. So anecdotally, our teachers are real excited about our Boost Up program, and they wish they had known about the SMART curriculum at the beginning of their careers. The program validates their intrinsic knowledge that students learn more efficiently when they're active. Pre-K teachers state that Boost Up activities promote kindergarten readiness, and parents and students are happy to participate in an alternative learning experience. The SMART Boost Up program through the MLRC has given us a chance to provide a developmentally appropriate supplemental program through two key ingredients, excellent training and continued mentorship. Thank you,
Ms. Green Sky. I get that right.
20 seconds, Madam Chair.
Very good. And, you know, I hate to have people drive so far and then get such a short amount of time, and I very much apologize for that. When we are at the end of session, we have, like, about 15 minutes for each bill, and there may be one somewhere along the line that doesn't take their full 15 minutes, but I haven't noticed too many of those lately. So I appreciate very much all of your coming, and there still are no members on the list. Are there any members with questions? Okay, thank you so very much. Representative Swales renews her motion for House File 1151 to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Representative Peterson. Representative Peterson, would you like me to move your bill, or did you ask a member to move it?
Madam Chair, I'd like you to move it.
Okay. My pleasure to move House File 412 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Peterson. Have you been here yet this year?
No, I have not, Madam Chair, and this is, I'm delighted, and it was wonderful to hear all these great programs and to be able to present yet one more wonderful program, and this is for professional development. I do, however, have an oral amendment that I would like to move at this point in time, and I don't think that you don't have it in front of you. Okay, and this is in response to Representative Demers' concerns when we heard this before the E-12 committee, the policy committee. And so on page 2, line 12, I would like you to delete the line that says the amount of each grant awarded under this paragraph shall, and then on page 2, delete all of line 13. And on page 2, on line 14, delete establish criteria to determine the amount of each grant, and instead insert the commissioner, after consulting with interested stakeholders, shall award grants not to exceed $1,000.
Okay, so... Okay, Mr. Strom says he has copies of it. Does anyone think you need for copies, or should we just have staff read it one more time? Read it? Okay. I will move for Representative Peterson that on page 2 of her bill, House File 412, we're striking on line 212 the amount of each grant awarded under this paragraph shall, and then the next two lines, 213 and 214, and replacing that with Mr. Strom or Ms. Mandelman. If you could read that, please. The commissioner, after consultation, Ms. Patrick.
Okay, be inserting the commissioner, after consulting with interested stakeholders, shall award grants not to exceed $1,000.
That's it. Any discussion on that amendment? Representative Demmer, does that take care of your concerns?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Peterson, yes, it does. We talked about this in the policy committee, and I think anytime we bring, when we tell the commissioner that she has to consult with outside groups that are not related to government, I think it's an issue. And I use Chamber of Commerce as an example and others. So thank you for that. I think it makes more sense. And the commissioner, I'm sure, will still consult with the interested parties, and it could very well include many others. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. And is there any other discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much. And it actually was a good suggestion. And so at this point, I did bring a testifier. We had two different testifiers at our first meeting, and now we have Lynette Wayne. And with a bit of disclosure, I'm going to say that I think Representative Demmer should be up here with us. He presented this bill last year with this same testifier, who I think has some connection with him, but I'm not going to get in. She can disclose that if she chooses.
And we do see that Representative Demmer is the first author, so we've got our curiosity up now. Ms. Wayne, please state your name for the record and tell us the mystery as well as your testimony.
My name is Lynette Wayne, and I'm a first-grade teacher from Hastings, and Representative Demmer and I are first cousins.
Oh, my goodness. Those dimples give you away.
No, that's from the other side of the
table. Okay, welcome, and please give your testimony.
Thank you. I'm so pleased to be here today to share my passion and enthusiasm for National Board Certification. I so strongly believe that the proposed legislation will promote quality teaching for Minnesota's children, and I appreciate the time that you're taking to learn more about it. The mission of National Board is not just to certify teachers, but to strengthen the teaching profession. What it does is it pushes us to think deeply about our practice so we will understand better what we do, and more importantly, how we can improve our teaching to serve students better. National Board Certification is designed to identify and recognize teachers who meet the highest standards of our profession. It's a very rigorous process that requires us to critically examine what we do in the classroom, and more importantly, the impact it has on our students. It includes an extensive series of performance-based assessments, which include teaching portfolios, student work samples, videotapes, or DVDs. It requires a thorough analysis of our teaching and our students' learning, and we must submit value-added data, which means we must compile several examples of students' work from different points in the school year, and then explain how they assess. So we must explain how we assess the work, develop interventions, and document how students improve in subsequent assignments. The value can be found as much in the process as the outcome. And over the years, research has consistently identified the links between quality of teachers and the achievement of students. However, scholars have struggled to come to a consensus on how to identify accomplished teachers until recently. Now there have been many research studies showing that National Board certified teachers do produce greater student achievement gains than other teachers and are especially effective for lower achieving students. 150 studies have examined National Board, and research is consistently positive about the impact of National Board certification on improvements to teachers' practice, professional development, and school improvement. For example, a study from the University of North Carolina stated that National Board certified teachers consistently outperform their peers in knowledge of subject matter, ability to adapt instruction, and ability to create challenging and engaging lessons. Just today, I looked up the numbers for our neighboring states, and Minnesota is trailing behind Wisconsin and Iowa both in our numbers of nationally board certified teachers. I just looked today, and Wisconsin had 73 new certified teachers this year, making their total 402. Iowa had 32 new national board certified teachers, making their total 523. In comparison, this year we only had 9 new certified teachers, and our numbers are now at 288. I believe probably the difference is the support, the financial support that they're giving their teachers to pursue this rigorous and challenging process. And so in looking at what their proposals are and what this one is, I think ours is quite modest, but it will do a lot to help promote and help our teachers who want to take on this challenge. Personally, it's the strongest, most challenging professional development I've experienced in my 25 years of teaching. It allows me to put my practice under a microscope and examine it against high national standards. I continue to use today what I learned throughout that process. I continually think about what I'm teaching and how it's affecting students, and I think you will find that common among teachers who are nationally board certified. It stays with you and you are changed, and you change how you work with children, how you work with your colleagues, and how you interact with parents in the community. As a national board certified teacher, I don't profess to be the best teacher in Minnesota or in Hastings, but what I do want to be is the best teacher for the students I'm with every day. I find no greater joy than to be in a classroom full of energetic and enthusiastic first graders, and I know that national board has helped me to be the best that I can be for them.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wayne. I think your cousin is going to grill you now, Representative Denver.
Hard question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I've got to go to another. I got a bill up, and I have to leave right now. But I did want to say that, regardless of our bloodlines, I did look at this very carefully last year, Madam Chair, and members. And you know, this is not sign up for a program, attend a meeting, and get a certificate. This is pretty tough stuff. If I remember my statistics, but I don't have it in front of me, I think roughly half the teachers who attempt this two-year program are successful in getting and achieving a certification. And I think in my business and in things that I've done with my employees and trying to get them to be better, when they're willing to invest their time and effort into improving themselves, regardless of whether it's helping to sell the parts that I have or whether it's to help themselves in the business, this is similar in terms of teachers. There's not a pedagogy I could not detect that there were any kind of biases in terms of the type of things you learn and that sort of thing. It's just about being better and working for kids, and it looked like an excellent program that the teachers put a lot of time and effort into, and so I strongly support that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Now I have to go.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. We can vouch for your cousin. He's not easy, so if he's for something, it must be pretty good. And I will say that I have one of my constituents once got this very esteemed certification, and I went to her graduation ceremony, and I was very impressed with exactly what Representative Demmer said and what Representative Peterson and Ms. Wayne have said, that it's very hard to get, and it does mean a lot, and we know that research shows that teachers that have very good educations, the kids do better as well, as you said. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, do you have a fiscal note on this?
Representative Peterson.
We do not have a fiscal note, but, you know, you really could. You can set the amount based on the number of teachers that you wish to have receive this, because the commissioner grants makes these grants, and so you determine the number of teachers and then put in the figures here for the amount of money, and it's pretty easy to figure out. So you want 100 teachers to be able to get this grant to apply. The one thing that's not noted in here is that the application process is $2,500, and we're providing $1,000 so that they have at least to pay part of that themselves, and then part of that grant would go to be able to apply and do that two-year process. And then once they have passed, then they would get a $3,000 one-time reward, and then after 10 years, they would get $2,000 for the renewal, which is another process that you have to go through. In addition, once you have passed, you would be able to receive $1,000 if you apply a grant for $1,000 for educational materials. And the last piece is a specified $100,000 for a support of one coordinator and three facilitators to provide that kind of statewide support. It's interesting that when teachers do this, they don't do it in isolation. They get together in teams. And if it's in the metro area, they'll drive from far away and get together in one spot and talk about the issues, exchange ideas, have speakers in. And the having a facilitator coordinate, establish a website will help with that whole process of getting our teachers to be able to get the certification. And so it really is a wonderful addition to have some facilitators and a coordinator, and particularly in Greater Minnesota where they don't have that kind of access many times to these kinds of folks. And so you really can determine and set the amount according to the number of people you want to grant the awards to.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson. What I am glad to see, though, is in this brochure that's included that there are some questions raised about whether or not National Board Certification really results in higher achievement in the classrooms of those teachers. I know this is a rigorous program because I thought about doing it when I was actively teaching and decided I just didn't have the time and chose some other things because it's very introspective, you know, so it, I think it really does improve one's professional status and one's ability to probably be a better teacher. But there are mixed effects regarding whether or not National Board Certification does result in higher achievement of students in those classrooms. And I noticed that North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida that have the highest numbers of certified, nationally board certified teachers all have proposals to back out of this program. So, you know, I think that raises some questions. And I see Dr. Sanders, whom some of us have heard a number of times, in his research, he has questioned the effectiveness, too. So, Madam Chair, though, this may be, you know, a good program for teacher development. I'm not so sure we want to spend our dollars on this at this time when we're looking at spending more in the classroom for general education and special education.
Representative Peterson wants to respond.
You know, there are a number of research studies that have been done on this program, and as you were talking, as our speaker already said, 150 of them are positive. And I do believe personally that it does result in greater student achievement. However, you can put the best teacher in the world in a bad teaching situation or a school situation environment that is difficult, and for a number of reasons, and no matter what you do, you're going to have difficulty getting the kinds of student achievement that you desire. And so I think that there are a number of factors that go into student achievement, and I'm not sure that the National Board alone is going to make the kind of difference that we want. We know that smaller class sizes are important. We know that a good leadership team in the building is important. We know that in-house professional development on a continual basis is important. All of those pieces are important, but the teachers that I have seen in this state who have received this National Board certification have the energy and the enthusiasm and continue to provide the leadership in their schools. I have seen it time and time again, and they're the ones like Lynette who continue to expand this to other teachers. They don't sit in isolation in their classroom and keep it to themselves. They are out there really promoting the program because they know it makes a difference in their teaching.
Thank you.
Would you like to add anything, Ms.?
Well, before we go to that, I'd like to draw members' attention. Is this what you're looking at, Representative Erickson?
Yep.
This one right here. Members might want to take a look at that because it's got the bottom line impact on student achievement. Independent studies show that students do better. And then down below, the next one, it says there's mixed effects. But we also have a quote here. It said, even data, however, from these studies also reveal, one of them is Ms. Dr. Sanders, that National Board Certified Teachers accounted for significant differences for students, certain grade and subject areas. So even, you know, Dr. Sanders is giving it a plug in this brochure that's 2007. We gave, I think, Representative Peterson her final statement, but Ms. Wayne, if you would like, do you have any closing comments?
Well, the only thing that I would like to share is if we can get money for support for facilitators to help, I know that there are teachers in Greater Minnesota that may want to go through this process They may be the only music teacher, the only media person, the only early childhood person. They have nowhere else to go for support. And I know they've contacted me. I have one teacher that's driving 400 miles once a month to meet with us. So I think part of our goal is to make sure that we can get help and support out to Greater Minnesota, too, so that they can also experience this if they would like.
Thank you very much. Representative Peterson renews her motion, House File 412, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney, your final bill for the day.
Good afternoon again, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome, Representative Dabney.
Thank you. If I could please move House File 1414 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill.
Representative Dabney moves House File 1414 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And as soon as the page is done chasing down testifiers from previous bills, if you could please share those with committee members. Thank you. Members, we all ran on the importance of education, regardless of which party banner we carried into that election. But I think as elected officials who have a passion for education, oh, okay, Representative Garofalo did not. I stand corrected. he always does. He ran on gas tax increases, I think.
Was that gas tax increases, Representative
Dabney? Thank you, Madam Chair. As most of the folks in the room having a passion for education, in all sincerity, I think that as elected officials, we have a special responsibility in relationship with civics education, with inculcating in the next generation the broad democratic values that have served this country the test of time and the test of trying times. And the broad values, but also the education on the mechanics and the structure of government. You know, the federalism and states' rights, of rights and responsibilities, of balance of powers, and even of all those kind of funny little flowcharts about how a bill becomes law that actually have little reference to what actually goes on around here in most states. But we have a special relationship to make sure that students today understand the values that underlie the work that we do with and for them every day, and that we need to train and prepare them to take our seats in the future. To do that, House File 1414 provides important support to government teachers across the state, assisting them in accessing peer-reviewed, standard-based lesson plans and materials needed for today's classrooms. And with me today, I have the Executive Director of the Learning Law and Democracy Foundation, Jennifer Bloom. And if I could introduce her and ask her to speak to the bill.
Welcome, Ms. Bloom. And if you could restate your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Bloom. I am the Executive Director of the Learning Law and Democracy Foundation. It's in St. Paul. It's a statewide nonprofit organization. We used to be called the Minnesota Center for Community Legal Education, which was a mouthful, and we were located at Hamline Law School and the University of Minnesota Law School. And I only say that because some of you might be familiar with some of our products. The Minnesota mock trial competition came out of our office. We've been around for about 30 years, and when I tell people that I teach civics, you may not appreciate this, but most people look at me like I'm nuts. I love civics, and I think it's probably the most important thing that happens in the K-12 experience. The work of our center is focused on helping teachers do the best job they can do and inspiring students to care about their rights and responsibilities and to care about government enough to get involved. We do it through professional development for teachers, in government, civics, and law. And when I say law, I'm a lawyer by training, but I don't practice. When I say law, I mean law making to law breaking. So we not only work with the A-plus students in the AP government courses, we also work with teachers who are struggling, with students who are living lives in corrections and alternative learning programs and similar situations like that. We work K-12. We develop curriculum materials. We have done this over the years, sometimes with grants from our own Department of Education, sometimes with grants from the Federal Department of Education. We provide technical assistance to teachers and schools who are trying to decide how to create, organize their civics and government courses, what level to put them at, what kind of materials are available. When we work with students, we do it through programs that are engaging and exciting and sometimes aren't in the classroom. They are sometimes out of the classroom, like the mock trial program was. We currently work with about 1,300 civics government law teachers from across the state and impact about 130,000 students. We are a very lean machine. We try to always think about how do we do this in a very effective, efficient way. And I think we've been pretty successful. The initiative we have in front of you is for our web page. Correct that, website. I'm now getting the terminology down. Mm-hmm. We have one of the oldest sites, and I mean that literally, out there. We were one of the first education programs to have a site because I had a real techie person working for me. But since 2002, when she left me, it has virtually not been changed. We've been working with Urban Planet, which is a web design company that has worked with 250 Minnesota schools in developing software for their web pages. And this group, Urban Planet, has donated its time up to this point. We've redesigned our page. We are loading our lessons, and we have now loaded over 100 lessons, into a new software program that will make the lessons searchable by subject area, by grade level, by standards, by strategy, meaning is it a small group discussion, is it a case study, is it a newspaper reading. The web page currently has between 500 and 1,000 hits a day and about 200 downloaded lessons. And I'm told by other people that's pretty significant. It doesn't take any effort on our part. What we love is that it's very, very efficient. We can reach teachers in Thief River Falls without driving up there. The changes, because there's been no significant changes since 2002, the initiative we have in front of you is to help us take our website to the new place. As I said, we've already redesigned it. We've loaded the easy lessons. We now have 25 years of lessons in about 15 file drawers that were written by teachers, were really good. Some of them were from teachers who retired and didn't want to see their lessons go in the trash can, so they shipped us boxes of materials. They need to be updated, as you can imagine. We need to review them for accuracy. We also need to review them for bias to make sure that the lessons we add to the web page are very high quality. This has become problematic, and I explained it in the one page in front of you. This didn't used to hit. I didn't get emails from teachers saying, "What do you think of this lesson? I found it on the web." I didn't used to see that. Most of the curriculum materials that you saw in classrooms were peer-reviewed, were published textbooks, and there was a quality standard attached to that. Right now, what I see are a lot of lessons that are created by interest groups. And interest groups, bless their hearts, they are motivated by an agenda, and it comes through on the lessons. So you'll find lessons that will present statistical analysis on one side and not another side. They will probably even misstate the current law, misstate the content, not because they're doing it intentionally, but I think they just aren't content experts. So we find ourselves more and more reviewing materials for these kinds of things. And what we want to do is to review everything that goes on our website to make sure that this kind of sort of spin, bias, inaccuracy has been corrected. The lessons will be very helpful to teachers because they tell teachers how much time it will take, what grade level, what subject area, what handouts do you need, here they are, how many copies do you need, how do you break your students into small groups. The teachers like our materials because they are very user-friendly. Teacher can pick them up, and I like to call them lessons to go. Pick them up and use them tomorrow. We do professional staff development oftentimes with the Humanities Commission, and they appear here earlier talking to you about their staff development. And the teachers will, on their little, if you want my opinion, kind of evaluation at the end, say one of the best things about this day was I have lessons I can use tomorrow in my classroom. On the flip side of the one page, you're going to see what teachers say about our work. We attempted to get a handful of teachers to come today, but their contract day doesn't end till 4, and my limited budget didn't have substitute money in there to pay their way to come here. So what they did is they sent in a few comments. You might notice, if you're paying attention, that there are a lot of teachers with the letter A. I have to tell you that I didn't have a lot of time to go through these, and they're all organized alphabetically, so there's a C up there, I don't know why, but then the rest of them are A's. But that'll give you a flavor for what teachers think about our work. We are looking for funding to help take this to the next level, to develop the software that will finish the searching piece, that will help us do the review. There's a peer review piece of this.
Excuse me, Ms. Bloom, we conclude in 1 minute, and there might be some questions, and I need to ask for public testimony. Do you want to finish your sentence or summarize in one sentence?
The peer review piece will give teachers the chance, almost like a travel web page where you can give critique, where teachers can come on, give their viewpoint, give teaching tips, share their successes and failures with other teachers.
Thank you very much. Is there any public testimony for or against the bill? Okay, don't see any. I don't see any members. So, Representative Dabney, closing.
In short, Madam Chair, I think the role of interest group should be the lesson, not the authors of the lesson. And this allows a highly respected nonpartisan organization to work with teachers across the state, making lessons available to them and strengthening our civics education in Minnesota. And that's a plus for all of us, especially as we look to the people who are going to fill these seats in the future and the voters who are going to put them there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bloom. And if there's nothing else, the meeting is adjourned.